This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The government of Myanmar, once known as Burma, soon will announce it is creating the largest tiger reserve in the world. It's an entire valley, nearly the size of Vermont. The driving force behind this is an American, Alan Rabinowitz, Director of Science and Exploration for the Wildlife Conservation Society. NPR's Renee Montaigne spoke with him for this National Geographic radio expedition.
Tigers are known to dwell in the Hukon Valley in northern Myanmar, mostly out of sight. Field scientist Alan Rabinowitz has spent the last 10 years traveling deep into the forest there in search of these elusive creatures and hoping to protect them. He says the key to a flourishing tiger population is not a heavily guarded wildlife sanctuary, but rather a porous environment where tigers can roam naturally over long distances to hunt and mate.
Animals like tigers and elephants, the largest carnivores and mammals on Earth, they are not going to survive if their future is just in isolated pockets of very hardcore protected areas. We have got to find a way to where we can create landscapes of both core protected areas and places where people live, and both elements of that equation can be balanced. Now, a lot of people talk about that, but very, very few people actually try to do it on the ground. This tiger reserve will be a model for that.
The tiger reserve will be in Myanmar's Hukong Valley. Here, rugged mountains and thick forest, often flooded and malaria-ridden, have made this huge swath of territory inhospitable to humans. Tigers have thrived, as well as elephants, clouded leopards, and other wildlife that's becoming endangered in the rest of Asia. In his book, Beyond the Last Village, Alan Rabinowitz captures the remoteness of Myanmar. It is, he writes, folded like a secret into the hollow underside of Asia, a green valley hemmed above by the monolithic mass of China, to the left by India, and on the right, Indochina. When he first surveyed the tigers in the Hukong Valley back in 1999, all he could hear were the call of hornbills and the trumpeting of elephants. But then the government cleared an old overgrown highway and set off a gold rush. Where once there had been a few small-time miners panning for gold along the Hukong River, by the time Alan Rabinowitz returned in 2001, tens of thousands of gold seekers had poured in.
People had complete access through the valley.
So where you had seen tiger tracks just a couple of years before, what was there now?
Where I had seen tiger tracks, now I saw big trucks carrying dozens and dozens of people or carrying hydraulic pumps for the gold mine and the karaoke bars. There were actually karaoke bars at the gold mining camps inside of the jungle.
Which is how it came to be that on one rainy morning, Alan Rabinowitz climbed on board a long, narrow motorboat, tape recorder in hand, and set off to find the headquarters of an ethnic rebel group known as the Kachin Independent Army. Even though the KIA had made peace a decade ago with the military junta that controls Myanmar, they still rule this valley. Here's an excerpt from his audio field notes.
We've just started our trek up the Turon River. Finally, after a strange mixture of messages back and forth between the Kachin Independent Army and military intelligence and the Central Army based in Rangoon, we have gotten permission to visit the KIA headquarters inside of Hukong Valley. This is one of the most important things I need to be doing in order to secure the future of the Hukong Valley Wildlife Sanctuary. More importantly, they have a village next to them of about 100-plus people who are involved in various forms of hunting and now gold mining, since gold has recently been discovered no more than a few miles away from the KIA camp. Entrance into the camp is restricted, but they seem to be welcoming us.
I was playing over so many scenarios in my mind as we were going up there, because though I knew that the KIA was on the surface welcoming us and that they gave a lot of lip service to the fact that they did protect wildlife and that they taught their children to respect wildlife, the fact remained, which I was going to show them, that we had dozens of camera trap photos, cameras we had placed in the forest in order to survey for the tigers, showing KIA people passing by with guns, clearly hunting, and in a couple of cases actually carrying dead animals.
When you pulled out pictures showing their own people doing what they claimed they weren't doing.
I remember that instance clearly, because as soon as I showed them pictures, they got very somber-faced. So I just said, we just need to work together and discussing how we can move towards this area truly being a protected area and you working on the side of wildlife while we somehow meet whatever needs you feel you have. And they agreed to that, and that's the most I could have hoped for.
Myanmar is a country that most Americans know as a brutal military dictatorship. What was your experience approaching this government, which in this case appears to be very progressive?
People often ask me political questions because I'm dealing in a country that seems to get nothing but bad press. And all I can ever say, I've worked now in Myanmar 10 years. And in those 10 years, the government of Myanmar has been incredibly receptive. They've increased their protected area system from one of the lowest in the world, under 0.1%, to now nearly 5% of their land area.
Let's play a final excerpt from your field notes.
The people living in the forest, everyone from the local hunters to government officials, clearly realize that wildlife abundance is dropping drastically in numbers. And they are clearly proud of their wildlife and wild land heritage and don't want to completely lose it.
You are going back to Myanmar in just a couple of days, and I imagine will be rather a joyous trip for you because the government has actually signed off officially on this tiger reserve.
This will be a very joyous trip, but it will also be the start of all the really, really hard work. Once all the pats on the back and the congratulations are taken care of, then we will sit down and talk about funds, which I will bring to the table, talk about management strategies, talk about how I and the Wildlife Conservation Society will be working together with the Forest Department over the next 10 years, 20 years, to make this world's largest tiger reserve not only a reality for tigers, but a model of conservation.
Alan Rabinowitz's article on the newly created tiger reserve is in the April issue of National Geographic magazine. It's titled A Question of Balance. I'm Renee Montaigne for Radio Expeditions.
Radio Expeditions is a co-production of NPR News and the National Geographic Society. Photographs and an extended interview are at npr.org.